for Resources is open. Let me go through a little bit of what we're going to do today, just so folks can make decisions about when they want to come back or stay or testify. We're going to start out with Senate Bill 707. That's the bottle bill. It's scheduled for a public hearing and a possible work session today. We are not going to go to a work session today. We're going to go to a work session on Thursday. So today we'll just be rounding out the public testimony from folks who haven't had a chance to testify before, or because it's been through a process now, a couple people that wanted to testify, we'll get them on. After that, we're going to go to Senate Bill 680, and then after that, Senate Bill 892, and then 711, and then 949 in that order. It's a pretty packed agenda today, so we'll try and get through it as best we can, but we'll start with a public hearing on Senate Bill 707. And Jack McGowan, you're going to be first up, but while you're getting ready, Sue Marshall is going to just give us an update.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 707, as originally written, requires the Department of Environmental Quality to develop a plan related to beverage containers and authorizes the department to adopt rules. I've distributed a staff measure summary that describes the Dash 1 amendment that includes single-serving beverage containers and increases the deposit. And there are additional amendments that, and we haven't received all of them yet, but just to give a little recap, since last we held our public hearings, there was a work group that was convened, made up of distributors, grocers, recyclers, DEQ, consumer and business groups. They met four times, and while there was no consensus reached, there was unanimous agreement that it's a very complex issue that ought to require some additional time to delve into some of the complexity. Although a majority did favor inclusion of at least water bottles and designation of an interim task force to further examine and make recommended changes, especially related to redemption centers and whether or not to increase the deposit. So that brings us up to date.
I'd want to know for the record that even though I agree with all of that, it didn't take a work group to let us know it was a complex issue. But it was certainly highlighted through the process of the work group. Thanks, Sue. Mr. McGowan, why don't you come up to the table? Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Avakian. Fellow committee members, thank you very much for having me. After my testimony, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have. For the record, my name is Jack McGowan. I am the executive director of Oregon's oldest and largest volunteer nonprofit organization, SOLVE. SOLVE was originally formed in 1969, by Governor Tom McCall. And really, SOLVE is the child of the first bottle bill. When Mr. Chambers came to the legislature, Tom McCall also, in addition to supporting the establishment of the bottle bill, also had a great idea, and that was to the creation of a citizen-led volunteer nonprofit that would really give every single citizen the opportunity where he or she lived in this state, the golden opportunity of becoming a true Oregonian by volunteerism, by doing something, by getting off the couch, and instead of watching maybe the NC2A on a Saturday afternoon, maybe coming down to the beach and cleaning up the coastline, or restoring wetlands, or cleaning up illegal dump sites. When Governor McCall created SOLVE back in 1969, one of the things he expressly forbid was that the organization actively support or oppose candidates for public office, Senate bills, House bills. So I am here in a neutral basis. I'm here to offer testimony, if you will, with empirical data that will at least address the problem that we have with this bottle, with where we are right now, and actually the explosion of recyclable but not returnable bottles, cans, and other plastics that are really degrading the Oregon environment. I say this firsthand after 17 years being the executive director. I'd like to, say that I feel carrying this bag, I'm not Santa Claus, but maybe what I am is the ghost of Christmas past. Because hearkening back to what the original bottle bill was, and thinking about where we are in this difficult procedure that we are embarking on, a complicated one, a one that has many different issues, many different sensitivities, I think we really need to address this as Oregonians. We all think about Tom McCall, and we still carry around the image of Tom McCall and Glenn Jackson and Clay Myers and Edith Green and John Passantini and these remarkable Oregonians. Well, if they were here today, what would they say? What would Tom do? And I think we need to think about that not only back in 1969, but we need to readdress it today. What I have here is a representation of what we found literally, not figuratively, literally by the thousands in this year's beach cleanup. Solve right now engages approximately 100,000 volunteer engagements in over 250 communities throughout the state of Oregon. Every legislator in this building will see a direct benefit of Solve to his and her constituents. As we walked along the Oregon coast in a driving rainstorm, we had over 5,100 Oregonians who came out on that extremely rainy Saturday and collected thousands of these along the Oregon coast. What I'd like to do is just give you a brief report on what these volunteers found. The largest single item in regards to the amount of debris used to be cigarette butts. It used to be thousands of cigarette butts that we would find along the Oregon coast. Now, it looks like it's been replaced by these. These are still sand encrusted, if you don't mind. I decided not to wash them, to bring them to you and show you what was there. In Fort Stevens, everyone knows where the Peter Iredale is. The Oregon coast, one of the treasures of this state. The Oregon coast is the only state in the continental United States that is absolutely free and open to the public. No other state in this continental United States has a beach bill. So these volunteers cleaning up our lands, our treasure called the Oregon coast, just in one zone, Fort Stevens, from the Peter Iredale up to the Clatsop Spit, found literally thousands of these containers littering the coast. Going down, a little bit further down, in Florence, thousands of water bottles, not figuratively, literally. In Waldport, in just 1 mile stretch of Waldport, over 350 water bottles found along the Oregon coast. And this is just one beach cleanup. If you go inland, and Solve creates more opportunities for cleaning up illegal dump sites and roadside litter than any other organization, we are finding literally tens of thousands of water bottles and other returnables that could be returnable, lining our roadsides, our stream beds, our rivers, our natural areas, our parks, our city streets. All of this is something that we need to address. The time is now that we collectively come together as the business community, as the legislative community, the political community, and most importantly, as the citizens of Oregon, to draw the line in the sand and say it is now. We need this type of initiative, and what I can say to you, ladies and gentlemen, is that Solve is ready, willing, and able to be a convener, to be a facilitator in going with dialogue, in finding an agreeable outcome that all parties can come to the middle, know that we have this problem, and try to address it, and walk away saying that we've done something for Oregon, because really it's our time to do that. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Committee? Well, I sure appreciate you coming today, and not just because of your good testimony. I mean, when you're out on the beach or in the street or wherever you are picking this stuff up, you see it, and you see it more than any Oregonian does, I think, and have for decades. So it's really the committee's pleasure having you here today. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and Senator Avakian, you know, I really commend this committee for taking on this difficult issue. I want to offer my support. And any way that I can help move this thing along, again, by either being a facilitator or a convener, I'd really be happy to do that, not only as director of Solve, but more proudly as a full-fledged Oregonian that truly loves this state. Thank you very much.
We'll bring up three folks next, Bob Santison, Marge Easley, and John Matthews. whichever one of you would like to. Mr. Santison, would you like to go first?
Okay. I appreciate this opportunity. I'm here today.
You just go ahead and give us your name for the record since we're recording. And
Bob Santison. Do you want an address? Or
no.
Okay.
No, you just go right ahead.
I'm here today as a former recycler of pop cans. I don't represent any special group or lobby or anything. I used to handle all the pop cans for my son's business, and we used the money to have a barbecue a couple times a year. But I no longer do it because the stores make it so difficult and time-consuming to redeem these cans. And I can sort of understand why after finding out yesterday. I've been searching for a long time, wondering what happens to all the money that doesn't get redeemed. And I found out that the bottlers and the distributors get to keep it. And I just think that's not right. I think the deposit money is owed to the people of Oregon, not the bottlers and the distributors. Of course, I'm sure they're going to oppose any increase in a deposit because that's going to get people to redeem these cans more, and so they're going to get less money. Besides millions of dollars in unfunded deposits, somebody is also keeping millions in recycling of scrap aluminum, plastic, and glass. Probably the most profitable is the aluminum. I think something needs to be done about the following. I think stores, I've talked to several stores, and they say they get absolutely no compensation for this redeeming of cans and bottles. And I think somehow they should get some type of compensation so that they'll want to provide a good place to redeem cans and bottles. And I think if a deposit has been paid on a can or a bottle, that you ought to be able to redeem it any place that somebody's redeeming them. Right now, if I get run across a can that's at Walmart, the closest Walmart in Hillsboro, I don't know where it is, but I can't redeem the can, so it just gets thrown away. I also think if a store is open 24 hours a day selling cans and bottles, you ought to be able to redeem 24 hours a day. I've been told that that's the way it is, but stores don't do that. And I think all plastic, glass, and aluminum, one serving size cans and bottles, they should require a deposit. I think deposit should be increased to whatever, 10 cents. I think this would increase the amount of redemption. And somehow I think unredeemed money should go to the state, not to bottlers and distributors, so that all Oregonians would benefit, whether that money's used to help clean up our trash or what. But I don't know who's getting the money for the aluminum. I suspect it's probably the distributors and the bottlers again. And that's, when you figure it out, it's a lot of money they're getting. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sanderson. Ms. Easley.
Chair Avakian, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Marge Easley. I'm the Action Vice Chair for the League of Women Voters of Oregon. The League of Women Voters of Oregon, I think most people know, is a grassroots nonpartisan political organization that encourages the informed and active participation of citizens in government. I'd like to take this opportunity to express our strong support for Senate Bill 707, which initiates the process, and it's a long overdue expansion of Oregon's 1971 bottle bill. On a national level, the League has a long history of support for recycling efforts, and in Oregon, the League has worked for many, many years for an expanded bottle bill, and we'll put our full support behind any steps that will increase the number and types of beverage containers that are included. We encourage all participants in future discussions to put their narrow interests aside and work toward maintaining Oregon's reputation as a leader in waste reduction and resource conservation. And we urge you to pass Senate Bill 707 out of this committee, and we thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Matthews.
Chair Vakian, committee members. Well, my name for the record is John Matthews. I'm currently employed with Garten Services here in Salem, a private not-for-profit organization providing jobs and training for persons with disabilities. But like Jack McGowan, Tom McCall's my hero. I got started in the recycling business in April of 1970, the first Earth Day, as part of a environmental teach-in at Oregon State University. I became the first recycling coordinator for Oregon State University, a program that has grown to national prominence today and has spawned off one of the greatest recycling curbside programs in the city of Corvallis early on. I'm a founding father of the Association of Oregon Recyclers. I was a member of Oregon Environmental Council when they lobbied heavily for the first bottle bill. I'm currently a member of the Salem Audubon Society, all of which support the SB 707. Maybe not the ultimate in improvements, but certainly a step in the right direction. A little bit of history of why we are here today and what the perspective of the original bottle bill. The original bottle bill, as you've probably heard, was basically an anti-litter measure. And it was extremely successful. Recycling rates initially with that nickel deposit refund on it were upwards of 90%. Today, people argue over it, but it's closer to 80-75%, depending on who you're listening to. It has something to do with the relative value of that nickel is about one-fifth of what it was back in 1971. Another little hint there that maybe we ought to do something. People are talking about, well, we have adequate curbside recycling opportunities today. And, yes, Oregon has one of the greatest recycling rates in the country because of our convenience at the curb, because it's commingled to make it even easier. But why, then, do we need a bottle bill? Well, it's because the litter has gone up. As you heard Jack talk about it a few minutes ago, we have a huge amount of plastic out there in the form of water bottles. Some of the surveys that the Association of Oregon Recyclers made show that one of the largest contributing factors in litter today are those water bottles. What's happening is that the opportunity to recycle in the single service drink is not affordable at the house. You consume it away from the house, and they're often disposed of away from the house. What did the original bottle bill do to address that? Well, it put a bounty on that potential litter. So that was an encouragement not to litter in the first place, but even more importantly, at that bounty were nickels lying around in the environment for people, a lot of luck, needing those nickels to take back to the store to get a little bit of something of sustenance, or for fundraisers, for scouts, and other charitable organizations. Those pieces of litter disappeared in large amount because of that bounty. So I think we need to address the value of that bounty in our efforts today. We need to address those new pieces of litter. There weren't water bottles back in 1971. Consumption habits have changed, but unfortunately, disposal habits have not. There's still the litter out there. There's still need for a bottle bill in Oregon's environment today. And I urge this committee to do what they can to pass this bill. I also support the fact that acknowledge the concept that the people who have always been on the short end of the bottle bill, so to speak, has been the grocers. They're expected to do all the redemption without any compensation for it. And I understand there's a proposed interim committee to look at the concept of redemption centers, which the recycling industry has looked long and hard at for some time, and feel it has a real place in helping to facilitate options for people to recycle. And options to make it more convenient, to recycle large quantities of materials that are recovered from litter. The onesies and twosies that people talk about taking back to the store are easily accommodated for curbside programs, but the anti-litter part, where you collect large volumes, are not accommodated easily at retail stores. Redemption centers might be a solution. So I would volunteer to help in any way I can in the future, and thank you very much for this opportunity.
Very good. Thanks very much, three of you. We have three other people to testify in 707. I'll just bring you all up together. Adam Haas, Don Schellenberg, and Lynn Lundquist.
Does it matter which order we sit? Or?
Nope. Just because there are so many people here, after this panel, we will be done with the bottle bill testimony today. Is there anybody else that came in late that had hoped to testify on the bottle bill? Is there? Okay, good. Seeing none, Mr. Haas, why don't you get us started?
Thank you very much. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Adam Haas. I'm a co-owner of a telecommunications consulting firm here in Oregon, Converge Communications. This is the very, very first time in my life, and I've made it to the ripe old age of 51, that I've come down to Salem to testify. So it must mean I'm motivated. I am indeed motivated. I am a big supporter of this bill. There have been many years when I've been looking at those stupid water bottles thinking, dang, I ought to do something about this. This is ridiculous. And so I was just so thrilled and excited to see this this legislation take form both in the House and the Senate, and I just think it's tremendous. I moved here in 79. One of the things that attracted me to Oregon was the environmental stance. And the bottle bill, the 71 bottle bill, was a big part of that. And I've been an avid recycler all my life, driving my kids around the bend, you know, insisting that everything get recycled, even though in their minds it's like, why? It's just one item. And I always make the point, yeah, but if I do it, you do it, everyone does it, it makes a big difference. It does not make sense that the bottled water containers are not part of this program. Think back 20 years ago. Would you believe that we would be paying for bottles of absolutely normal water? In fact, the selling feature of this water is that it contains nothing but water. Wow, that's great marketing. I do want to really focus on this seriously, which is, let's talk about the production costs of this product. Wow, there's nothing to say. It's just water. So, we now have a container. What's the true cost of this product? It's the appropriate recycling and disposal of that container. And it is simply not happening. I'm a business person. I've been a business person all my life. I understand margin. I understand this margin. The margin on this product is tremendous. The industry, no matter what they tell you, can afford to facilitate the recycling of these bottles. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Haas. Mr. Schellenberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don Schellenberg, representing Oregon Farm Bureau. Our House of Delegates, which is 90 members, similar to the legislature, not because of the same reason, but that's just happened to be the way it turns out, has long supported the bottle bill. And they just, their last session last December, revisited that issue, and their policy now reads, and it's one sentence, I'll just read it to you, we support the bottle bill being expanded to include all glass, plastic, and aluminum carbonated and non-carbonated beverage containers and increase the deposit to 10 cents. Now, why would we take a position like that? There's a lot of junk out there along the country roads, along the farm country roads. Just last Sunday morning, my wife and I were getting ready for breakfast, and we were mentioning how cold it seems. She says, well, why don't you check the thermometer outside? So I stepped out the door and looked at the thermometer on the post under the porch there, and 31 degrees. Yeah, that's cold, all right. And then I looked, and there was somebody walking by, and I went, oh, this is unusual. And then I noticed he had a sack over his shoulder, and he was walking along, and I could see he was looking in the ditches. And he was out there picking up bottles and cans. along the road. Hour later, we're on our way to church on a different road, 3 miles away. Here he is again. And boy, this guy's making time. So there is some very good incentive, obviously, for people who are out there picking up cans and bottles. Talked with one of our board members at lunch today, and from over in Tillamook area. And they're part of an OLEB group, and they pick up, they clean up a particular area. And he said to one of the group members, I'll go over to this quarter acre that we have, kind of has a parking area there, and I'll just go clean that up. He went over there, and he said, you wouldn't believe how much stuff was over there, cans and bottles and boards and rugs and all kinds of stuff. He just couldn't believe it. Why is this a concern? Well, it's more than what it looks like out in farm country, as bad as that may be. It also has to do with plastic bottles. They can get in and they can gum up farm machinery real quick. When I make the first round on the field next to the road, I'm always a little bit squeamish, and all of a sudden you hear this pop, and you know you ran over a glass bottle, and you just hope it doesn't puncture your tire. So there's all kinds of reasons that agriculture is in strong support of bottle bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Lundquist.
Thank you, Chairman Avakian. Lynn Lundquist, President of the Oregon Business Association. As a business association, I'd like any other associations, we have principles that guide us along the line. And one of the principles, is if you'd ask someone and said, probably your principle is something along the line of, what can you do that's good for business? What can the association do that's good for business? I'd like to come back to them and say this. Our principle is not that. It is, what can we do for Oregon that's good for business? Because in the end, what we do for Oregon is good for business. We talk about people coming in and business coming to the state, and why do they come? All the studies that I've seen have looked at indicate that quality of life is one of the top reasons that people come to Oregon, whether it's for business purposes or just for living. And we're talking about something today that has to deal with that. Businesses are no different than individuals. We're proud of our state. We have a pride in it. We're proud of our heritage. But at the same time, we want to keep our backyard clean. And this is one of the avenues that we can do this through this bill. As we looked at the changes of the bottle bill, I think we need to recognize that we have a really good system today. And I think the chair has alluded to that earlier. It's a very efficient system. It's effective. And it minimizes the cost in relationship to the productivity of bringing our containers back to the stores. So as we look at this, I think we want to minimize the changes. And I think this bill does that. It brings in one change, bring the water bottles, but it doesn't bring in all the others, containers. It does it in a way that, what I say, minimizes the change in the process. Now, we are a business organization, and so we go by a principle of having business plans. I can tell you that one of the business terms that we think of is that the stores should not be the redemption centers. That's a business issue. But reality of it is, until we can have a change that's appropriate, they will continue to be that. But we need to work for that, and that's why I want to talk just a minute about the other part of the bill, and that's the study part of it. That is critical, and I think it's in some ways can even be, over the long term, have a longer-lasting effect than just bringing the water bottles in by themselves. As we go through that study, the redemption centers are a very complicated issue. They need to be convenient, they need to have recycling effectiveness, and they need to be cost-effective. And that's a huge challenge, and I hope there is a group that will be appointed by this through this bill that will be able to answer those kind of questions and come up with a solution to that. Having said that, yes, that's a goal out there, but let's not forget that just adding water bottles is a win by itself. It's too easy to say we haven't gone all the way. That is a win. I think we ought to relish in that and keep our eyes focused on the fact that at some point we come to the business plan of getting these containers out of the stores and into redemption center that is better for everybody involved. Thank you very much.
Good. Thank you, all three of you. Appreciate your testimony very much. And for those that are watching or listening over the air, or those that are in the room and just don't know, Lynn Lundquist is the former Speaker of the Oregon House of Representatives and was an integral part of the Bottle Bill Work Group in helping us to navigate some of the tougher issues around putting together this bill. So, former Speaker, thank you very much for your efforts. With that, I am going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 707, and I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 680. Senator Rick Metzger, sponsor of the bill, if you would like to come up to the table.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 680 directs the State Department of Fish and Wildlife to develop a 25-year plan to enhance opportunities for angling in Oregon. It requires the department to provide a full-time equivalent employee to work on angling matters, appropriates money from the general fund to the department to pay for the cost of the 25-year plan and full-time employee. The bill sunsets on January 2, 2010, declares an emergency, and is effective July 1st, 2007. There is a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and we have received a letter from the Native Fish Society who cannot support the bill in its present language. They are all for enhancing angling opportunities, but they are concerned about programs related to the production of hatchery fish.
Senator Metzger, welcome.
Well, welcome. Rick Metzger, State Senator, District 26. It's always interesting to hear things that aren't even in bills, but that's always an interesting part of the process. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm going to speak very briefly about Senate Bill 680. There's a number of folks have signed up to testify and support. We'll give you some of the background on that. I appreciate your hearing this bill today, and would ask that we could move this to Ways and Means so we can be considered part of the overall budget with the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Actually, this is very appropriate that you have scheduled this right next to Senate Bill 707, because there is a direct relationship to Senate Bill 707 and Senate Bill 680, and that is, as Oregonians, we want to look forward to future generations where they could go out to the river and find more fish than water bottles in our streams, in our rivers. What Senate Bill 680 does is send a big message to Oregonians that we are concerned about the fisheries of this state and providing opportunities for our children and grandchildren to experience what many of us, I know Senator Atkinson, Senator Bates, particularly involved in fishing, to experience what we know and what we feel about this great resource. And I think it's without question, as you know, the agency is a fee-driven agency. And to accomplish a lot of the great work we do with restoring fish runs and providing great habitat comes from the volunteers, many of who are sitting behind me today, because they're involved in angling and they experience and they understand why this is important. If we lose those people because we don't have opportunities and they don't know why it's important to maintain our fisheries and provide those opportunities, then we're going to be fighting a losing battle into preserving this great heritage we have. What this tells Oregonians is that we recognize, like every other agency in the state, that the population is growing and that we're going to provide opportunities, and we're focused on engaging the public in experiencing the opportunities of fishing in this state. There's a lot of regulation that takes place that's happened over the last 20 years, but we want to make sure that Oregonians know this is not the Museum of Fish and Wildlife. This is the Department of Fish and Wildlife, that we intend to engage Oregonians as the population grows to provide opportunities so they can become engaged and help be advocates for angling opportunities in the state. It is interesting to note that the department originally had a marketing person in the original budget, was not included in the governor's budget. This provides that person, which is why it goes to Ways and Means, as a person would help spearhead developing this plan, getting together with stakeholders, engaging them, and sending the message that we're concerned and that we do care about engaging the public in opportunities. Hopefully they'll come back with a good plan that may have some further opportunities for us to discuss how we can further enhance fishing opportunities. But I think that's an important message. It's not just what we can't do in our rivers and streams, but what we can do. And what we can do is engage the public. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Thank you, Senator. Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for recognizing Senators Atkinson and Bates as being fishermen, but reach out to the co-sponsor of the bill.
Thank you. Co-sponsor of the bill. I just haven't had a chance to fish myself. I would very much look forward to doing that, maybe on the Molalla, right?
Absolutely, if we can get some fish in it.
Yeah.
He might have been doing you a favor. We haven't seen how you fish, Senator Beyer.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, thank you, Senator. Troy Karskaden and Les Helgeson. How do we do, Troy? Karskaden?
Okay.
Karskaden.
That's just fine. For the record, Mr. Chair, I fish with Senator Beyer, and he knows which end of the rod to hold. He's a fisherman.
Thank you. I'm sure he does. Whenever you're ready, go right ahead.
Thank you very much. Chair Avakian, members of the committee, my name is Trey Karskaden. I'm a resident of Tualatin. I represent the Northwest Sport Fishing Industry Association, and I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 680. Oregon's sport fishing industry has worked hard these past 20 years, hoping at some point our state, regional, and federal governments would embrace and understand the benefits sport fishing brings to this region. An economic study is underway right now through the Department of Fish and Wildlife. It will likely show that sport fishing in Oregon is a multi-billion dollar industry that provides employment to tens of thousands of Oregonians. As an industry, we've never asked for a subsidy, just a fair shake. And Senate Bill 680 is the fair shake we've been looking for. We believe, as do thousands of others in our industry, that Oregon can be the sport fishing capital of the world. We have so much to offer: diversity, access, infrastructure, and an industry ready to provide the necessary support. At the heart of this, you'll find salmon, steelhead, and sturgeon are essential triggers that provide an important draw and stimulate participation that in far-reaching economics as well as tourism. Assuming we succeed in effectively enhance sport fishing opportunity, you can count on meaningful increases in tourism that will directly benefit Oregon's coastal and rural communities. This is opportunity that we currently export to Alaska and Canada. To give you a thumbnail sketch of what could be, one of my friends, an Oregonian, who owns a sport fishing lodge in western Alaska, charges $6,200 a week. He'll spend another $800 just to fly there. These are the dollars that we're exporting tens of millions of. Enhanced sport fishing opportunity goes well beyond the obvious benefits to tackle shops, sporting goods, charters, guides, hotels, and restaurants. Enhanced sport fishing opportunity will directly benefit the dozens of boat builders and boat dealers in Oregon. Beyond those benefits, you can bet that state and county parks, marinas, moorages, gas stations, grocery stores, and area attractions will all realize the advantage of expanded angling prospects, as will all the associated retail and the businesses that support those businesses in this state. In other states like Alaska, this is exactly what's happened. If your colleagues have any heartburn supporting the new full-time position this bill calls for, please ask them if 9 months of full parking lots in Astoria, Warrenton, Hammond, and Rainier would be well received. How about coastal fishing seasons in Newport, Tillamook, Brookings, Gold Beach, Coos Bay that were nearly year-round? Enhanced angling opportunity would reach into places like Springfield, Eugene, Oak Ridge, Maupin, Lapine, Madras, Hermiston, Joseph, Enterprise, Burns, and Kay Falls. Fishing in Oregon is an avocation that provides income to every corner of this state. Increasing it means increasing the associated benefits to even the most remote areas. Thankfully, sport fishing is a light touch on the resource and our natural resources. Today's angler is more conscious of the future and their impact on that future. In a sentence, enhanced angling opportunity delivers nothing but clean benefits to this state. Thank you for hearing this bill. Thank you to Senator Metzger, Senator Beyer, for sponsoring and supporting it. And thank you for your service to Oregon. Again, this is long overdue, and the Northwest Sport Fishing Industry Association wholeheartedly supports Senate Bill 680. Thanks.
Mr. Helgeson.
Thank you, Chair Avakian and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Les Helgeson, and I'm here representing the Native Fish Society. I understand our comments were submitted to you earlier, and we have a number of concerns. We're a regional nonprofit founded in 1995, and our goal is the conservation, preservation, and restoration of wild fish in the Pacific Northwest. And we work to establish effective management policies based on the latest scientific research available.
vast majority of our members are dedicated anglers, and I should say passionate anglers, who share a deep commitment to the Society's mission. And our director has asked me to emphasize that we are not angling and anti-angling or anti-angling opportunity. But the Senate bill before you proposes to enhance angling opportunities in the state by directing the department to develop a plan through, you know, quote, any topic deemed relevant by the department, including but not limited to a strategic marketing plan to recruit new anglers. And as stated earlier, we cannot support the bill with the current language. And again, we want to emphasize that we're not opposed to increased angling opportunity per se. We just feel that it should be done consistent with our mission and that of the department's mission as well. And that involves conservation. And I believe the Attorney General has issued an opinion in years past regarding the dueling mission, if you will, of the department between providing opportunity, recreational opportunity, and conservation. And their interpretation was that you provide the recreational opportunity through conservation efforts. And really the essence of my testimony here today is that if we restore our fisheries and provide quality fisheries, then the recreational opportunity will follow. It's we're concerned about talk about going back to stocking hatchery trout in steelhead-bearing streams and this sort of thing. And that's of utmost concern to us. I've been involved with fisheries issues now for, 25 years, and I've seen numerous efforts parallel to Senate Bill 680, not at this formal level, but you know, there's been educational efforts, bumper stickers issued by the department. You might recall the "We hatch 'em, you catch 'em," and that kind of stuff, and free fishing days. You know, I bring my kids to the free fishing days at the hatchery, and it just didn't work. And we're faced with a unique sociological issue here, I think, that our kids are really tied up with school, with work, and video games, and computer conferencing, and that whole game. It's tough to get them interested in angling. My kids lost interest in it. There's just too many demands on them. So And the department has tried this several times, engaging more youth, and that's really what we need to do. But it isn't working. And we've tried putting in new types of hatchery fish and or more hatchery fish, and it's still, you know, we haven't accomplished this goal. What we are in the process of doing is restoring and recovering our fisheries. And that's a big task. And that's where we need to focus our energy, our time, and particularly the general fund dollars. There are many issues such as the huge hatchery maintenance backlog, for one thing, the need for monitoring and evaluation of listed species and even those on the verge of listing. So, you know, those are our concerns, and we have met with the director here, and I feel comfortable working with him. I feel maybe we ought to just continue meeting on a regular basis, quarterly or whatever, and try to, you know, with all the interested parties and try to work a common path out in this. Other than that, you have my written testimony.
Okay, thank you very much. You. Committee, any questions?
Mm-hmm.
Seeing none, thank you both very much for your testimony. Roy Elliker and Roger Furman.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I know you have a busy schedule this afternoon. I just would want to make a few points for the bill, and I'll refer you to our prepared testimony as it comes around. We have worked closely with Senator Metzger on this bill from about the first week of the session when he pulled me into his office and said we need to do more for recreational fishing, particularly in the Willamette Valley.
Roy, go ahead and say your name for the record.
I'm sorry. Roy Alliker, Deputy Director for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Now, let's start again. Anyway, for about the first week when Senator Metzger pulled me into his office, and we talked about the concepts of this bill and the kinds of things that we thought we could do with this position and the plans and the ideas about population growth and about as I guess he put it best, if you don't have fishermen out there visiting your favorite river or stream, then you don't have a constituency who looks to make sure that there is good fishing, that there is clean water, and good family-style recreation for folks in that community. And myself and others in the department couldn't agree with him more on that. Looking at prepared testimony, I wanted to make a few points. First of all, that increased population growth in Oregon as well as neighboring states will place additional demands on Oregon's natural resources and existing fisheries. That any planning effort that we do will probably work this pretty strongly, must include implementation and funding strategies, which we've talked about, Senator Metzger, and which would be part of any plan we produce under this legislation or even without this legislation. We intend to continue to work closely with Senator Metzger, Senator Beyer, and others, particularly in that mid-Willamette Valley, on fishery resources and fisheries. Since 1994, the department has been focusing what available funding and manpower we could on additional recreation efforts, particularly on warm water fishery species and urban and youth opportunities. We have made some great strides with the help of the legislature and Oregon Heritage Foundation and others. We have spent $3 to $5 million to restore Diamond Lake, and that fishery will once again hopefully be up and going and be one of the best trout fisheries in the state, like it was traditionally up through the early 70s. We've been working in the mid-Willamette Valley on developing community fisheries like St. Louis Ponds and other areas. I know we've been talking to Senator Beyer and local anglers on the Molalla Basin about more opportunity there for folks. And we also, in the last couple of biennia, and like, for instance, this year, or this biennia, we've already stocked an estimated 40,000 trout in 42 locations to provide youth angling opportunities. So we have been doing some of this, Mr. Chair. However, we think that the bill is a good idea, and the position is certainly a very good idea, and help us focus our efforts that. I'd like to ask Roger Furman, who's our new administrator for the Information Education section. He comes from us, from Idaho Fish and Wildlife, and essentially, and he won't admit this, but frankly, one of the great national leaders in fishing hunting recruitment in agencies right now, and we've lured him over to our state in the past 6 months, and he was going to make a few points about what we could do with this position.
Good. Senators, for the record, my name is Roger Furman, Information Education Division Administrator for Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Strategic marketing is envisioned in this bill, has been very successful in a number of states in a way to recruit and retain anglers, particularly bringing back lapsed anglers, those parents or adults that have dropped out for one reason or another, that when they come back in, often they bring their child with them. And it helps build those family relationships that many of us grew up with and remember fond memories that we have grown up in fishing and hunting with our parents or grandparents or our aunts and uncles. So those programs have been effective. I can provide details at some point if you want more information on some of those. When we've talked to folks, both at the national level and at the state level, of why people don't fish, why they don't go fishing, why they don't go hunting, it's usually not enough time. And usually it's given as work or family obligations. Really, there's very little that as an agency we can do to increase the number of hours that folks have. What we can do, though, is try to encourage them to use what limited time they have to go fishing or hunting or go outdoors and spend that time with their family. That's what strategic marketing is about, encouraging them to make those choices to spend their leisure time in the outdoors. And the other part of a strategic marketing campaign is providing information and making folks aware of the opportunities that are out there. We handed out a copy of the Easy Angling Guide and then also another handout that we're going to be putting together on warm water fishing opportunities. That's the kind of information that makes people aware of the opportunities that are out there and helps them decide to spend their time out fishing and hunting and enjoying the wildlife heritage that we enjoy here in Oregon.
Very good. Committee, any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bates.
Thank you. Roy, what's been happening in the last 24 months on the number of licenses issued in Oregon? I know it was going down. Has it continued down? Has it flattened out?
Chair Vaki and Senator Bates, currently angling license sales are flat. They've been flat within some range of where they go up and down, depending on, but generally been flat over the past decade. And Roger can speak more specifically about that. Hunting sales over the past decade, hunting license hunter numbers are currently at about 275,000 in the state of Oregon now. They've been declining at a slow rate, maybe 1 to 2% per year over the last decade. So that's kind of what we're faced with right now. Very few states have been able to do much to change those trends. Some have been successful, a handful. Most are suffering through a slow decline in hunting like we are, and then a pretty flat in fishing. Like I said, we can come prepared to talk about that tomorrow as well, Senator, in your office.
Mr. Chair, the only comment I have is that I believe this department, which was struggling a few years back, and they remember that, has really turned a big corner here. They are talking more and more about quality fishing experiences and offering a quality experience to those people wanting to go fishing, which I think is also a big factor in bringing people back. You've also been talking about maintaining and enhancing native runs. You understand the science of that, and you're working towards that, and I appreciate it. And you've done things like at Crane Prairie and other major impoundments that actually enhance the fishing and help. The Diamond Lake project you've already mentioned. I think this is a natural part of that program. I'm glad this bill has been brought forward. I have no concerns about how the department's functioning and doing. I just wish more people would go fishing. Kids nowadays sit in front of a video machine and getting fatter, and cholesterol's going up, but they're not out there doing what they should be doing, which is out in the outdoors. And without that next population coming up, I'm concerned about how well we preserve our natural resources, because people won't have the experience of being out there. And I think the people who can do the best job in maintaining those natural resources are people out there using them. So I appreciate Senator Byers bringing this forward, along with our good Senator Metzger. And I'm only sorry I wasn't having a chance to sign on, too. Great bill. Thank you very much.
Thanks to you. Next panel, Phil Donovan, Mark Davis, and Tom Wolf. Including those three, we have six people left to testify on this. If you could keep your testimony just a couple minutes, that would be good, because we've got a few more bills to hear today.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Phil Donovan, Government Affairs Representative for the Association of Northwest Steelheaders. We were involved in the development of the Department of Fish and Wildlife budget during the legislative interim. And at that time, we were strong advocates for preparing a policy option package to do basically what is in Senate Bill 680. It did not get funded, though, in the governor's recommended budget. I do want to acknowledge that the Department of Fish and Wildlife did prepare a policy option package. It just simply wasn't included. And so our thanks to Senator Metzger and Senator Beyer for bringing forward this legislation. Two issues. First, sales are flat, as Senator Bates was referring to, and I want to point out that it's been flat during a period of growing population. So another way to look at it is declining. And to reverse that, let's face it, marketing works. That's why companies do it, and that's why the Department of Fish and Wildlife needs to do this work. Second issue, it's really about recruiting the next generation. And with me today is Mark Davis, who is the volunteer president of the Association of Northwest Steelheaders. And he's going to talk very quickly about the role we play recruiting children, the part that we do. But we need more help to do it in a comprehensive manner that this legislation considers. Thank you.
Chair Avakian and members of the committee, my name is Mark Davis, and I'm president of the Association of Northwest Steelheaders. Each year, our members put in over 30,000 hours of volunteer work in service of the community and of the fisheries. Two of our major projects involve almost 1,000 kids at Bonneville and out at Hague Lake in Washington County. During free fishing weekend, we will introduce them to the outdoors, whether they like it or not, and we will get them out from in front of those computers. Our new hatchery and education center at Coos Bay will expose tens of thousands of children to the salmon that are available to us in the outdoors. We have a fish tank program that puts 170 chilled aquariums in classrooms across the state that teach children the salmon cycle. Our new watchword, is no child left inside. Northwest Steelheaders knows. Nice twist.
I like that.
Northwest Steelheaders know that we must begin to successfully market the fishing potential of this state to both our citizens and to our neighbors. Teaching our children the value of Oregon outdoors will guarantee their stewardship. We all need to remember we're only borrowing this state from our children. We need to make sure that we're leaving the place where they, too, can enjoy the Oregon angling experience.
Thank you. Mr. Wolf.
You know, I was expecting both my predecessors to be much longer-winded than they were, so that was much quicker. But Senator Cherevakian and committee members, my name is Tom Wolf. I'm the executive director and chair of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited, which represents 4,000 members here in the state of conservationists who are anglers. I have before you some testimony that I'm not going to read all of it, but I just want to state for that Trout Unlimited opposes the bill, not because we think the concept of angling enhancement is bad or the recruitment, but we're worried about the language of the bill. Number one, if the bill is passed, we're concerned about where does this fit into the budget and will this cause another program to be deleted from the final budget of ODFW. Number two, whereas we believe that everybody should have enhanced angling opportunities and we are greatly concerned about the number of anglers, we would oppose stocking of non-native fish into streams that, or, you know, we've heard that there's proposals to stock hatchery trout into streams, and we would oppose that. So those are our two concerns. Trout Unlimited is a conservation group dedicated to healthy cold water watersheds and composed of anglers, which cares deeply about bringing new anglers to the sport and enhancing angling opportunities. Our 4,000 members put in over 50,000 hours of volunteer efforts during the year, and many of those are composed of going into schools, teaching kids about angling, putting on clinics for both kids and adults that don't know how to angle, working with the bow program, becoming an outdoor woman. For example, the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited is currently running a four-day clinic for kids in the Clackamas area where we bring in kids, many of them on scholarship, teach them about angling, teach them about watershed education. And we believe that that the best person to defend our watersheds and our resources of fish are anglers. And we are doing a poor job of recruiting new anglers. And if you read the figures, the area that there are, that the decline of anglers is the greatest in is under the people under the age of 18. So we applaud ODFW for recognizing that there's a problem. We applaud ODFW for looking at creating a program that would do something about this. We just cannot support the bill in its present language. If we were to work out some of the problems that I've detailed, and we are willing to work with ODFW in all manners, we could possibly support this kind of program, but not in its present language. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Beyer.
Thank you. I guess these comments we directed both toward Mr. Wolf and Mr. Native Fish. Anyway, you know, I appreciate what you're saying, but reality is, you're right. The reason kids aren't fishing, and kids would like to get off the couch too, and you know, I haven't had too much trouble getting my kids fishing, and I have kids that my kids go are age from 22 to 11, and the reason is because kids like to kill fish. It's that simple. When kids go fishing, they want to take something home to show what they did, and your philosophy that we can't enhance fishing opportunity. Fishery means fishermen and fish. You got to have both. And kids want to kill fish. That's all there is to it. They want to take it home. They want to display something. I know a person who came to my place and fished his first fish he caught. And this was in 98. And the last time I talked was his father. He said, you know, that fish is still in a freezer. I mean, that's what they want, and the reason kids aren't fishing is because groups like yours, they want to go out and they want them to catch fish and put it back, which is fine for some people, but you want to hook a kid on fishing, he's got to take the fish home and show it off.
Chair Avakian, could I respond to that?
You can respond very, very briefly.
Chair Avakian, Senator Byers, first of all, you misunderstand the position of Trout Unlimited. We are not opposed to killing fish. We believe that in situations where they're like, for example, the mountain lakes where there are tons of brookies, we say go up there and kill all you want. We believe that you should kill all the hatchery trout and salmon that we can. What we are just concerned about, we are concerned about specific areas where there's native wild populations of trout and salmon that we are concerned about stocking hatchery fish in there that could cause problem within the ecosystem. So as far as you believing that we don't want kids to kill fish, that's wrong. You know, I go up every year and I help kids at clinics.
Okay, wind it up.
To clean their catches, and I support you. They do love to kill fish, and we're not against it. What we are against is the harm that stocking non-native trout into the system could bring.
Very good. Thanks very much, three of you. Danny Ritchie, Fred Van Natta, and Tony Meeker. Unless, Mr. Elliker, you feel the need to come up and talk about ODF&W's position on killing fish. No. Okay.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair.
Senator Atkinson.
For the record, I have a four-year-old who caught his first fish at Senator Byers' place.
That's good.
And for the record, we let the fish go, but we intend on killing it this year.
All right. Hello, gentlemen.
I'm listening to that.
Welcome.
I forgot what I was doing. My name is Dennis Ritchie. I'm executive director of Oregon Anglers and a newly founded group called Oregon Anglers Research Society, which basically works on funding research and education in the fisheries area. I've been heavily involved with ODFW in many projects over the past few years. I was involved in the writing of the native fish conservation policy, as was several people in this room. I served on the Rules Review Board, the Statewide Wildlife Conservation Plan, and the Coastal Coho Recovery Team. I'm currently on the Ocean Sports Fishing Advisory Committee, the Willamette River Recovery Plan, and I'm currently chair of the Oregon Hatchery Research Center in Fall Creek, which we believe holds a great deal of promise for this state. We feel this bill is a great idea. I'm not going to go into as much detail as I put on my written comments. I think there's one particular point that I need to make that has to do with many of the streams in our state that were classified as steelhead streams without any basic science behind them at the time, because when the state had to do that, we didn't have all the background information. Many of the biologists that we've worked with have said that they were a little bit in haste on this, and they're willing to look at which streams really are steelhead bearing or possibly coho bearing, whatever, and if they're not, make those fishable streams for hatchery fish where it would do no harm. I think one bit of language that should be in this is that possibly we should specify that this is aimed at aquatic species and not marine species, mainly because the feds pretty much control what we can do in the ocean, both within our territorial sea, the first 3 miles, and the federal waters. And the federal committees pretty much control what we can do and what we can't do. So I think we need to stick to what we can do. I would like to address the paranoia about hatchery fish. I think we need to leave that to the current ongoing science. We have two of the best research centers in the world in the Oregon borders. The Hood River Hatchery is perhaps the finest genetic research center in the world, and the Oregon Hatchery Research Center down off the Alsea River on Fall Creek now has been developed as a wonderful physical setting for comparative studies. And already some of the old science about beliefs about hatchery fish are turning out to be a little bit shaky. We would like to see more research in this area before we move on it, but we would not like to see the door closed on the use of hatcheries as an economic tool for the state. Thank you.
I am Fred Venata. I reside at 347 Ewald Avenue in Salem, and I'm a fisherman. I'm a member of the Lower Columbia Walleye Club, the Mid-Valley Anglers, Tillamook Anglers, Nestucca Anglers, Northwest Steelheaders, Salem Chapter, Sandy Am Fly Fishers, Recreational Fishing Association, our Recreational Fishing Alliance, and the International Game Fish Association, and not the least of which, Oregon Anglers, of which I'm a co-founder. I have not had a chance to review this bill with my fellow members of those organizations, but I'm absolutely confident that the vast majority of them would support this legislation. It is clearly on the right track. Probably, if I were writing the bill, I would make it clearer that we spend more time and effort on more fish than on more marketing, because more fish will equal more fishermen and women. And let me quantify one of the statistics that has been testified to earlier. Comparing 1990 and 2005, we have 20% fewer annual fishing licenses issued. Meanwhile, our population has increased 29% between 1990 and 2005, that 15-year period. So there is a significant diminishing of people fishing, and I think fewer fish is the major contributing factor. I strongly support this bill and urge you to send it to Ways and Means, and for you to talk to your colleagues in Ways and Means down there to make sure that it gets an affirmative action.
Very good. Mr. Meeker.
Good afternoon. My name is Tony Meeker. I'm president of Oregon Anglers. Mostly I'm semi-sort of retired, and I have worked 44 years for the right to go fishing as much as I possibly can. But I'm really here not for me, but for my grandson. He's going to be 2 next month.
Yeah, I know.
I'm very, very concerned about the last several years where we've seen a decline in the number of people spending their money on fishing licenses, and at the same time watching the general fund dollars committed to the agency evaporate. Literally to almost nothing. You've got a golden opportunity to invest for the future, not only for my grandson, but for everybody else's grandsons and daughters. It's your chance to bring fishing back the way it used to be, with a lot of Oregonians, maybe 8,000 or 9,000 per legislative district, fishing. And that's what this is really all about. We need your help to get the marketing done, to get people to go back fishing, and to bring more fish, and that's what this bill does.
Very good. Committee, anything?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Beyer.
If Senator Meeker was still on this side of the dais and he was facing the same issues, and when did you leave the Senate in the early
1987.
87. Had they been facing those issues that we're facing today, I'm sure he would have supported this bill and funded it in Ways and Means.
You're absolutely right.
Well, and I'm hoping, too, seeing how we have you and Mr. Venata both here, that if we run into any hurdles in Ways and Means, the Capital Foundation might be interested in doing something for us.
That, too.
Is it possible to evict the Ways and Means Committee?
Yeah. All right. Thank you, the three of you,
thank
very
you.
Much. With that,
and I might, Mr. Chairman, I found a pair of glasses sitting here that somebody in the room might want to
Michelle, collect. Actually, would you mind grabbing the glasses and the water bottle that are still up there. Thank you. And with that, I'm... No. No, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 680, open a work session on Senate Bill 680. Senator Beyer, if we could have a motion.
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 680 to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer moves Senate Bill 680 to Ways and Means with a due pass. Is there any discussion?
Fish on.
Senator Atkinson says fish on. That is unanimous. Any objections? Seeing none, The motion carries. Thank you, Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr.
And with
Chair.
That, I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 892. And Sue, if you would like to fill us in.
Yes. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 892 directs the State Fish and Wildlife Commission to establish by rule a youth hunter mentoring program. There is an amendment, I think, that was distributed on the dais. It declares that would declare an emergency and changes eligibility age from 9 and older to 9 to 14 years.
Thank you, Sue. Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Roger Beyer, State Senator, District 9. Before you, Senate Bill 892, and I will describe it initially as last bill, second chapter. This bill is introduced because we have the same issue that was discussed in the last bill, where angler numbers are declining. We also have hunter numbers declining. And the purpose of this bill is to try to reverse that trend, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, by making it possible for young hunters to be introduced, potential young hunters to be introduced to the sport at an earlier age, get them interested. Just as I said in the last bill, young fishermen like to kill fish. Young hunters like to do likewise. They like to kill game. And this bill hopefully will give an opportunity for it to introduce him to the sport and successfully to the sport, because I think that's key to have a mentor. And to have some success at a young age is very, very important to get someone hooked on a sport. Just as success in anything in life is very important to get someone hooked. No difference in this arena. So Senate Bill 892 is an attempt to do that. You've already heard about the Dash 1 Amendment, just a clarification, and also make it applicable to this coming hunting season. If we put an emergency clause on the bill, we will allow people to be able to use this in the 07 season, and that is part of the Dash 1 Amendments. And with that, Mr. Chair, I don't need to say more. And turn it over to Rod Harder, who we drafted the bill, and he worked with us to draft the bill, and take any questions you may have.
Mr. Harder, welcome.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. For the record, I'm Rod Harder. I'm the Oregon representative for the National Rifle Association. Here today to give you a brief outline of what Senate Bill 892 does and some of the reasons that we asked Senator Beyer to put it forth for us. There are some other individuals who have more detailed information, and I'm going to leave some of that to them. A lot of them, the Wild Turkey Foundation, has been working a long time on this bill nationwide. And it has passed in 12 different states, which are listed on the end of my written testimony. One of the biggest challenges that the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife faces is in addressing the decline in hunting numbers, as you have heard on the previous bill. Contributing is the problem is the large number of adult hunters that are dropping out for a number of reasons and the very significant lack of young people coming into the program. Youth Hunting Report, a study of hunter replacement ratios on ages 6 through 16 conducted by several agencies across the country, concluded that Oregon was ranked 48 out of 50 states in terms of recruiting young people into hunting. Oregon ratio was a 0.35 and a 1.0 was necessary to maintain numbers at the 2000 level. Oregon was also rated one of the most restrictive states when it came to requirements placed on people before they could hunt, young people before they could hunt, and on those under 13 to hunt at all. Obviously, if we're going to reverse this trend, we have to do something soon, and we believe that 892 will do that. The bill is fairly simple in concept. It directs the Fish and Wildlife Commission to establish by a rule a program that allows the youth between the ages of 9 and 14 to hunt for big game when in the presence of a mentor. Mentor must be a licensed hunter, 21 years of age or older. There will only be one firearm allowed between the two people, and the youth can use the mentor's tag, which means he doesn't have to draw a tag for himself, but can share the tag with his mentor or her mentor. They'll be able to participate in the program until they're 14 years of age, at which time they will have to take a hunter safety course before they can continue to hunt. Currently, 12 states with the programs in effect. A report from the North American Wildlife and Natural Resources Conference in Portland 2 weeks ago stated that half the states that have the program have reported a significant climb in new hunters. Data from Florida, Illinois, Michigan, Minnesota, Mississippi, and Ohio reveals that apprentice hunting license programs brought nearly 34,000 new hunters into the field, and this is very important, without a single hunting firearm accident. Not a single firearm accident out of 34,000 new people. We've not discussed any license cost, and one doesn't appear in the bill. The mentor will be purchasing the licenses and tags, and should the commission decide that they have to have some kind of registration, the cost should be minimal, and we view that as being an investment in producing future income for the agency. The Dash 1 amendment, as Senator Beyer has said, contain an emergency clause which would put this in, and an agency has indicated a desire to get this up and running this year. The other thing it does is put the 14-year age limit on. There was a slight problem with the bill, the way it was drafted, and that people could hunt until they're 18 without taking a court. So Dash 1's correct that. I think this is a really great bill. I would encourage your support. Thank you very much for the opportunity to appear, and I would answer any questions you might have.
Senator Atkinson.
Thank you. Not so much a question, but as a comment. I had a bill similar to this about four sessions ago, but this is superior in every way. But my comment for it really is more for the department to put something on the record. In my family, we've been outdoors people since forever. But my grandfather, before he passed away, one of my uncles collected all of his hunting licenses from his youth and framed them all from all these years. And it's this big thing with all these various. And he was one of the founding members of Ducks Unlimited and a few other things of distinction. But in that plaque, what makes it so interesting is, and it goes back to marketing, is he had a little, when he was a kid, he had these little buttons that he wore that said, California Junior Sportsman on them. And it was a big deal. I ran out while you're walking up there, went and grabbed one of these things. It cost pennies, really, to create. But it was this California youth hunter tag that he wore, and it was an honored thing because he carried these things forever. And when he became the dad of five and then the grandfather of all of us, he had a little card that he used to pass out to his kids and grandkids about the importance of passing out and taking along a kid. And we have those as kind of an interesting Atkinson memento to them of all these little things that says make sure that if you're outside, you've got a kid with you. But I say that because one of the things that I hope that this bill does that maybe the department can instigate is, along with telling the story, is to make the uniqueness of the program, youth hunter mentoring program, some kind of ID or button or badge or patch or something. That means a lot, because they really do mean a lot as these kids grow up. I mean, I'm growing one of these now that's almost ready. But I just think that this is an incredible bill, and I hope we do amend it, so maybe Senator Beyer would let me put my name on it.
And one more comment, if I might. One of the most direct and forceful lobbyists that I've had to push this bill is Carl Beyer.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bates.
Just a quick question. You mentioned several times it applies for big game hunting, but in the bill I don't see that restriction. I hope that restriction is not there. I hope it's for all hunting. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, I can answer that question. Currently, the age limitation for hunting at the age of 12 only applies to big game. Youth can hunt for small game in Oregon, but for big game you have to be over 12 under current rule.
Great.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Harder. John Thebes, Al Elkins, Rick Williams.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Al Elkins, representing the Oregon Hunters Association, 12,000 member organization here in the state of Oregon. With me today, to my right, is Rick Williams, Vice President of our board, and he's the point person for our youth programs and the types of things that we've done. We're here to support the bill, and I'd like to turn it over to Rick to talk to you for a moment about youth and hunting in Oregon.
Very good. Mr. Williams.
Thank you. My name is Rick Williams. I reside at 314 Southeast 202nd Avenue in Gresham, Oregon. And I'm a native Oregonian and a lifelong outdoorsman. I've enjoyed fishing, hunting, and other outdoor activities in the state for over 40 years. I'm also the vice president of the Oregon Hunters Association, and I would like to speak in favor of this proposed legislation. About a year ago, I participated in the ODFW Hunter Recruitment Work Group, which was formed to examine the causes of the declining hunter participation. Not surprisingly, our work group of diverse individuals had similar findings to the national report called the Families Field Report, which was sponsored by three organizations, the National Wild Turkey Federation, U.S. Sportsman's Alliance, and the National Shooting Sports Foundation. The factors that we identified, similar to what Rod stated earlier, were the aging population of the hunters, reduced opportunities and access, the busy lifestyles of today's families. These factors, combined with the restrictions and regulations on youth hunters, make it difficult for kids to participate in hunting at an early age. The Families of Field Report discovered that kids not introduced early in life to any activity become less likely to be lifetime participants in that activity. This legislation addresses that fact as it relates to hunting. In fact, hunter recruitment is a national issue, and mentor hunting legislation has already been passed in 12 states, and several more are considering it right now. You might want to ask, why would we want to put guns in the hands of younger kids? That's a fairly common misconception that would lead to an unsafe situation. The facts prove that mentor hunting program participants are the safest hunters in America today, and so far in the states that have enacted the programs, there's not been a single program-related hunting accident or incident. In an open letter dated July 2005, the International Hunter Education Association detailed their support for the mentor-style hunting programs. The Hunter Education Association is the parent body for all hunter education in the United States. I just would like to read a couple of excerpts from that letter. The mission of the IHEA is to continue the hunting heritage worldwide by developing safe, responsible, and knowledgeable hunters. Our policies call for widespread participation in responsible hunting for all eligible ages, genders, and skill levels. They go on to say, an analysis of youth hunting incidents shows that the major factor affecting youth safety is the presence of an attentive, responsible adult hunter to supervise youth. Most incidents happen in the absence of an adult supervisor or during a lapse in the adult supervision. The data is clear. Accompanied young hunters are safe. The facts do not support having laws restricting the limitation age of hunters for safety reasons. So in closing, I'd like to point out that hunting is one of the safest recreational activities in America today, and also in Oregon. It instills traditional family values, connectivity with nature, and healthy lifestyles. This particular program has been proven to work. It is safe, and as an Oregonian and a hunter and a father, I would urge you to support this legislation.
Thank you.
Senator Avakian, my name for the record is John Tebus. I'm a Southern Oregon Rogue Valley resident. Formerly, I was the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife State Hunter Education Coordinator, and I'm current a hunter education instructor, and I am currently a regional wildlife biologist for the National Wild Turkey Federation. But most importantly, as Senator Atkinson established, that I'm the father of four kids who wishes this legislation would have been passed years earlier. But on the bright side, I have a grandchild who will surely partake in hunting at an earlier age by my side. The National Wild Turkey Federation has been instrumental in looking into the family of fields statistics, and by the previous speakers, you know that this is a safe sport. Youth mentoring is safe, and it is a useful tool for recruiting hunters.
But the most important aspect of this bill is the ability that fathers, grandfathers, will have more time and more bonding time with their children and grandchildren. So I would urge you to pass this bill. I would also rather see the bottom age limit dropped off and let the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, in their public hearings when they establish the rules, establish those outer limits, or that at least the lower limit. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Committee? Nothing. Thank you, three of you, very much. Thank Mr. you. Elliker, Mr. Furman, you're up.
Again, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Roy Elliker, the Deputy Director for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. On my right, Mr. Roger Furman, the Information Education Administrator for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. You've heard a lot of good testimony, Mr. Chair. We think this is a great bill ourselves from the department. We'd like to see it pass out today.
Thank you.
And I'm here to address any questions.
Thank you. Nothing to add? Very good. Thanks, both of you, very much. Appreciate your testimony and support of the bill. With that, I'm going to close public hearing on Senate Bill 892. Open up work session on Senate Bill 892. We have a motion on the dash ones, please.
Mr. Chair, I'd move the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 892.
Senator Atkinson moves dash ones into 892. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the dash ones are adopted. And if I could have a motion on the bill.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the Senate Bill 892 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Atkinson moves 892 with do-pass recommendation to the floor. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Beyer.
I don't know that it would be necessary, but I will declare a potential conflict of interest as I have an 11-year-old son, and if this bill passes in its current form, he likely would be involved in a mentor hunting program this coming fall.
So noted. Thank you,
Mr.
Chair, being so conscientious.
As long as Senator Beyer isn't doing the mentoring, we should be safe.
Very good. Any other discussion? I would just like to add the committee's thanks, Senator Beyer, for two very, very good bills that help preserve a good deal of the culture and history of Oregon. So thank you for bringing them before the committee.
Well, these are like I said, this bill is really, really well thought out. Good bill, and I hope that the department helps market it and gets a little button or. See me if you want to see a historical picture of the one that was used 80 years ago.
Very good. And with that, any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. And Senator Beyer, you will carry the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
With that, I am going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 711. Glenn Cloyd, you're going to be the first up if you would come up while Ms. Marshall reads the bill. Actually, before you read the bill, Al Elkins, why don't you come up too? If you want to keep your comments very brief, though, this is not a bill. We're going to move to a work session today. And for the department, I know you're here to testify on the bill. Since I'm not moving it to a work session today, if it's possible for you to hold off on comments till we get to that time, if we ever do, that would be helpful for us. All right, thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 711 authorizes the State Fish and Wildlife Commission to issue resident pioneer hunting tags and resident pioneer angling tags free of charge to persons 65 years of age or older who have resided in the state for not less than 50 years. There is an amendment, a dash one amendment, that would add a buy one, get one free component whereby an application for a pioneer hunting or angling tag must be accompanied with an additional application from someone under 30 years of age and who is paying in full.
We'll go Mr. Floyd and then Mr. Elkins. Actually, I didn't know that you had a slide presentation. How many minutes?
About 30. I'm just joking.
Yeah. That's good.
We're ready.
I'm going to try to make this.
We don't need a license for this.
We're going to make this as painless as possible. It won't take long. About 8-10 slides.
Okay, good enough.
All right.
Okay. First of all, I'm Glenn Cloyd, the Oregon Sportsman's Association. Thank you, Senator Vakian, for looking at this bill and members. We're going to go through this real quickly, as I know that we're getting strapped for time. Under this, we're going to talk about pioneers, the impact, and the amendment that we've put in on this bill. Pioneers, they're individuals 65 years of age or older, 50 years residents in the state of Oregon. These individuals paid a lot of taxes over the years, fees and licenses, and they're on, a lot of them are on fixed incomes, and a lot of them are veterans. We'd like to honor these people. The impact on the pioneer license, since 2004, there's been an increase of about 1,528 over the last 3 years. These numbers here are data that I've received that may not be exactly like the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife could have. A lot of this is in the individual level. Total licenses over the last 3 years, and this is across the board, hunting, fishing, and everything else, increase of 21,356. So here's kind of a quick graph of what we have as far as your angling, your combination, and, of course, we don't have anything for 2007 yet because not completed. Some of these have been left out because some of these licenses or tags didn't go through all 3 years. Here's a graph of the last 3 years as far as ages of hunting and fishing licenses across the board. Again, these are not just Oregon residents, but also out-of-state people that come to brought in licenses. I will be looking at a grant to see if this is really a midlife crisis right here, but I'm thinking maybe. Who knows? All right. We've got the amendment that we've just put in. This would cushion the ODF&W financial loss. And we realized after looking at some things and some numbers that they presented to us that, yes, that's a substantial amount of money that they could lose. But what we're trying to do, as well as the previous two bills that we saw, was a mentoring. So this amendment would, if you brought a person 30 years of age or younger with you, to purchase a tag or license, and it would be a like tag. So if that person purchased a deer tag, then they would be able to get a free deer tag. So this is something that we want to also promote because, again, we're looking here at this 30 years of age, right in this area here. We'd like to see this up in this area. So as soon as they're 18, we're getting a lot of those individuals in, going through the whole hunting and fishing experience here in Oregon. And basically, we think if we increase that, ODF&W will actually make more money that way than just the way that things are happening right now. I'm open for questions.
Very good. Thank you. I go to you, Mr. Elkins.
Thank you. Al Elkins, again, Oregon Hunters Association. Our role usually every session is to keep the department whole budget-wise, to keep the biologists in the field and the OSP's officers funded. This has a $1.8 million impact, the original bill, and we could not support that because of the fiscal impact. And we understand where he's coming from, his association, and what they're attempting to do, but we just can't support anything that would have that kind of fiscal impact on the ODF&W. That concludes my testimony.
Committee, I'd like to hold off on questions, if that's all right, in case the bill comes back again. Thank you both for being here and at least getting us started with the bill.
No problem. Thank you for hearing it.
With that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 711. I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 949. Obviously, we're low on time, and a number of people that showed up to testify today, which we didn't expect quite so many, and some of you are regulars in the building, and this bill will be back, but I am going to take one panel, and that'll be Diana Enright, Beth Dolio, and Chris Beatty, and that will at least get us started on the issue, and a couple of you I know drove quite a way to get here. We appreciate that. Yeah, Sue, would you please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 949 authorizes the issuance of lottery bonds for grants to fund feasibility studies regarding the development necessary to construct cellulosic ethanol demonstration plants, appropriates money from the cellulosic ethanol demonstration plant project fund to the State Department of Energy to provide grants and loans to certain entities to undertake feasibility studies. There's a sunset on the measure set at June 30th, 2010, declares an emergency is effective on passage, and there's a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Chair Vakian, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Diana Enright, Assistant Director, Oregon Department of Energy. While this is not in the governor's budget, the Oregon Department of Energy supports the concept of Senate Bill 949 and feasibility studies for cellulosic ethanol pilot plants. I came across a recent article in Technology Review that was titled, Will Cellulosic Ethanol Take Off? The subheading was, Fuel from Grass and Wood Chips Could Be Big in the Next 10 Years If Government Helps. Senate Bill 949 is an example of government helping. It has the potential to allow local ventures to grow into this arena. Feasibility studies can lead to development of a business plan, which will look at the type and supply of feedstocks, location characteristics, potential buyers, and selection of existing best practice technologies. That business plan can then be used to attract venture capitalists. This strategy, hopefully, will allow cellulosic ethanol to follow the path that corn ethanol has created to date. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you, Chairman and Senators. I really appreciate you giving me a few minutes here. I will keep it short in respect of the time. My name is Chris Beatty. I'm the president of a Corvallis-based startup called Trillium Fiber Fuels. We are focused specifically on regionally based cellulosic ethanol. I wanted to come in support of this bill because there is a need, as mentioned, to sort of kickstart demonstration plants. There is a bit of a chasm right now. You may have heard recently about some big awards from the Department of Energy that were towards cellulosic ethanol. Those required essentially a $20 million ante from the participating companies. So the only beneficiaries are companies like Cargill and Dow that are very, very well financed, and small companies such as ours simply can't even enter into that kind of arena. The other agency that routinely helps this kind of thing is the USDA, and their hands are currently tied in that they are not allowed to fund cellulosic ethanol with 9006 funds, Farm Bill funds, because it is not, quote, a proven demonstrated technology. So two of those main sources of funds are currently not available to us. What we are trying to do right now is take the process that we've put together, which, by the way, is for Willamette Valley Grass Straw, and put together a combination of private equity money, loan money, and business energy tax credit money to put together an approximately 2 million gallon pilot facility. It is a little bit in the, it's a small production facility by one measure. It's a pilot plant by the 100 million gallon a year measure. But cellulosic ethanol is going to have to walk before it runs. And so smaller facilities are what's going to come online first. I don't want to take up a lot of your time. Just say that we've studied the feedstocks, we've talked to the farmers, we're talking to the balers, we're talking to the rest of the supply chain, we're working on our business plan. This kind of money to help bring investors to the table to get a first plant online is helpful, and more of it is needed. Any questions from anyone?
Committee? Nothing. Thank you both very much for your patience in waiting till the end. Senator Mona Sanderson, we were just going to take this one panel and then end, but if you wanted to say a few things, certainly, or next time when the bill comes up. Sure. Why don't we wait till next time? We'll have a fuller hearing next time. Is Beth Dolio anywhere nearby, though? Does anybody know? She was signed up, but not. Okay. She had to leave. Well, for Miller, Fast, Misek, and Krupp, thank you for waiting so long, but I'd rather have more time to consider your testimony than rushing it through the end, and the bill will be back again for sure. So
With that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 949, and we are adjourned.